Please join me in 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 4, where we're going to continue my chronological assumption that the death of Samson and the destruction of the Gaza temple of Dagon was immediately responded to by the Philistines gathering together an invasion force, which marched northward along the Mediterranean coast until it could turn eastward and start an ascent that would take them up to the tabernacle at Shiloh, which they have every intention of destroying in revenge for what Samson did in destroying their Dagon temple. This is a continuation of the get-even relationship between the Philistines and Samson that had been going on for about 20 years. When the Israelis realized that this invasion force was headed for Shiloh, they immediately mustered as large a response as they could. The leadership, the elders of all the tribes, gather the militia there at the place that's going to eventually be called Ebenezer, but it's right east of the city of Aphek, where the Philistines have encamped. And the Israelis get beat that first engagement. So the elders of Israel authorize the bringing of the Ark of the Covenant to the front lines, because in their mind, they think that they need God to be on the scene. And God is enthroned between the Gerubim on the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant is not a storage box. It is a portable throne. And so we read in 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 4, that the people sent to Shiloh, they brought from there the Ark of the Covenant of He who is of the armies, Yahweh Tzabaoth, God's military title, who's enthroned on the Kerubim, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. So God's throne is being escorted by the two priests, not very good guys, the sons of the 98-year-old high priest Eli, who's been acting as high priest for 40 years now, the whole time of the Philistine oppression of the Israelis. As soon as the Ark of the Covenant of He Who Is came into the camp, all Israel gave a mighty shout so that the earth resounded. So they're excited. When the Philistines heard the noise of the shouting, they said, "What does this great shouting in the camp of the Hebrews mean?" When they learned that the Ark of He Who Is had come to the camp, the Philistines were afraid. So they said, "Gods have come into the camp." And they said, "Woe to us, for nothing like this has happened before. Woe to us, who can deliver us from the power of these mighty gods? These are the gods who struck the Egyptians with every sort of plague in the wilderness." So they know their history. They know that the, quote, gods, which is just an acknowledgement of the plural form used by the Israelis about the singular God, He Who Is. They know their history, that He Who Is, Yahweh, is the one that ruined the entire Egyptian economy of that day of departure from Egypt by the Israelis. And that bothers them. It worries them. But they just can't turn tail and run, because the Israelis had just chased them down and do to them as the Philistines had done to the Israelis, make them into slaves. So their only choice is to buck it up and push forward and try to overcome whatever supernatural support the Israelis are getting from their God's presence in the camp. So verse 9, take courage. Be men, O Philistines, lest you become slaves to the Hebrews as they've been to you. Be men and fight. So their battle cry is, fight or be enslaved. And so, verse 10, the Philistines fought, and Israel was defeated. A little bit of commentary here. They were defeated because God allowed it. The Israelis are acting exactly as the book of Judges describes. There's no king in Israel in those days. There is no ultimate authority in the minds of any of the Israelis. And so everybody does as they see fit in their own eyes. They're making up their own rules. They're flying by the seat of their pants. This grabbing of God's throne and bringing him down to the battle lines was just another example of, we'll do whatever it takes to win. And God's like, I'm not on board with that. It's time for some judgment. So he allows them to be defeated. They fled, every man to his home. So they all run away, those that survive this second battle of Aphek. And there was a very great slaughter for 30,000 foot soldiers of Israel fell. So that's 34,000 in total of 2 days fighting. That's a big number of Israelis dead. The ark of He Who Is was captured, and the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, died. Now this is a fulfillment of a prophecy made by God many years earlier, that his two boys would both die in the same day as a sign of God's judgment on their illicit behavior. God has allowed them for 20 years and more, 40 years, to do things inappropriately. But now comes judgment day, and they're both dead. And the bearers of the ark apparently either were killed or they ran away as well. And so as the Philistines are cleaning up the battlefield, you know, picking up all the things of value, gathering up the dead bodies and disposing of them, they find the ark of God just sitting there. And so they capture it. Now, remember, they think of the Ark of the Covenant as some sort of idol. And they will treat it as if it is a captured god that needs to be taken to be presented before their victorious god, Dagon. We'll get to that part of the story in a little bit. But first, we have to read this part. Verse 12, a man of Benjamin ran from the battle line and came to Shiloh the same day. Now, Shiloh is not very far from where the Battle of Aphek took place. It's, I think, 16, 17 miles, something like that. It's not that far. And so he runs up there with his clothes torn, with dirt on his head. Now, that is a symbol of grief, remember. You rip your clothes, you throw dust on your head, as a sign of intense sorrow. When he arrived, Eli was sitting on his seat by the road watching, for his heart trembled for the ark of God. Now, he can't see physically, as we'll discover in a moment, but he is waiting for news to come from the west to let him know how things are going, because he is really nervous about God's throne being taken out of the Ark of the Covenant, or out of the tabernacle. When the man came into the city and told the news, all the city cried out, When Eli heard the sound of the outcry, he said, "What's this uproar?" So he can hear what's going on, but he can't quite make sense of it. So the man hurried and came and he told Eli. Remember, Eli is technically the high priest, but he's kind of high priest emeritus because he's blind. He can't serve as high priest hands-on. But he is the highly respected leader of all things here at Shiloh. Eli is 98 years old. His eyes were set that he could not see. So that's where I got all the information. So that means he was 58 when he started as high priest 40 years earlier, when the oppression of the Philistines started as well, by the way. Verse 16, the man said to Eli, "Well, I am he who came from the battle. I fled from the battle today." And he said, "How did it go, my son?" And he who brought the news answered and said, "Israel has fled before the Philistines. There has also been a great defeat among the peoples." So it didn't go well at all. Israel was horrendously beaten. You know, many, many tens of thousands of Israelis lie dead on the battlefield. The people were routed. They broke in their ranks and they've run away. And then he says, "Your two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead, and the Ark of God has been captured." So he or those that reported to him stuck around long enough to see the Ark go into the possession of the Philistines and to know that Hophni and Phinehas were dead. And so as soon as he mentioned the Ark of God, the focus is on the Ark of God, God's throne. Eli fell over backward from his seat by the side of the gate, and his neck was broken and he died. For the man was old and heavy. So he'd put on some weight over the years, and when he flung himself backwards out of grief, he landed on his neck in such a way that he snapped it. And now he's dead. He had judged Israel 40 years. A little bit more information. Now, his daughter-in-law, the wife of Phinehas, was pregnant, about to give birth. Now, as I already told you, Phinehas and Hophni have got to be probably in their 60s and 70s. So Phinehas has apparently started on another bunch of kids in his old age. It's not surprising. We've seen during the time of the judges that people in leadership just, they don't care. They do what they want. Who cares about God's intention of one man, one woman for a lifetime? They just start multiplying wives to themselves because there's power in that. Power in having lots of kids. So he's got a pregnant wife at home. And she was just about to have this baby anyway when she heard the news that the Ark of God was captured and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead. So she's got this whole bunch of shock happening at the same time. She bowed and gave birth, for her pains came upon her. So the stress of hearing all of this bad news puts her into labor. And it is a hard labor. I will mention at this point something that might contribute to why her labor was so lethal. We discover later in prophetic literature that the Philistines didn't just stop at Aphek on this day. They defeated the Israelis, and then they finished what they came there to do. They continued up to Shiloh, and they destroyed the tabernacle. They ripped it to shreds. They completely destroyed the city that was there as well. So the Israelis, knowing that the the shielding maneuver for Shiloh had failed, that the militia going down to Aphek area had fallen apart. They know that they got to evacuate. And so I wouldn't be a bit surprised that even though she has gone into labor because of the shock here, they are still trying to get her to join the evacuation, to go elsewhere, probably southward, toward more secure areas to the south. And I think that may have contributed to her labor killing her. So about the time of her death, because she does die, the women attending her said to her, "Don't be afraid, you've borne a son." So she's had a baby boy, but she's bleeding out, it sounds like. She didn't answer. She didn't pay attention other than this. She named the child Ichvod. Kavod is the way you say glory. Ich is the idea of departing. So she gives the baby boy this name as she's dying, Ichabod, saying the glory has departed from Israel, because the Ark of God had been captured, and because of her father-in-law and her husband. She said, the glory has departed from Israel, for the Ark of God has been captured. So it's over with. The glory of God has abandoned us. It's gone. And then she dies. Now, we'll hear about this baby boy later when he grows up. And so just kind of keep his beginning in mind when we come to that name later. So I told you we'd get back to what the Philistines did with the ark. That starts in chapter number 5. When the Philistines captured the Ark of God, they brought it from Ebenezer, which it'll get that name later, but it's someplace just east from the city of Aphek. It's the place where the two battles happened. They brought it from Ebenezer to Ashdod. So once they're done trashing Shiloh and doing whatever else they do on this revenge tour, they go back down to the Mediterranean coast, turn southward, and they take God's throne, the Ark of the Covenant, to the northernmost city of the five cities of the Philistines. And that city is Ashdod, right there on the coast. And the Philistines took the Ark of God, they brought it to the house of Dagon, and they set it beside Dagon, or in front of Dagon, perhaps, would be the better way of picturing this. This is another temple devoted to the father of the gods named Dagon, which the Philistines adopted whenever they moved into this region many, many, many generations ago. I don't know if it's the same style of temple as the one at Gaza. I get the impression that the one at Gaza was the more significant place, the biggest place. But Ashdod is now the place that they want to present to their god Dagon his great victory captive, and that is the god of the Israelis, his idol. And so Dagon's image would probably be in a little recessed area at one end of the temple. And then in front of that little special alcove is where they put donations to his glory. And so they park the Ark of God right there in front of him, because in their mind, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, is now the prisoner of Dagon. And so he has to pay tribute to Dagon by being in his presence. But God flips the script. Verse 3, when the people of Ashdod rose early the next day, and they opened up the temple of Dagon for the business of that day, behold, Dagon had fallen face downward on the ground before the ark of He Who Is. Now imagine the shock of the priests coming in that next day, and there is their god, the idol representing their god, laying face down in front of the ark. It looks like he's bowing before the god of the Israelites, the god of the Hebrews. I don't know whether or not Dagon's image had upraised hands or not. It seems as if it probably did. But that would have added to this visual effect of Dagon worshiping He Who Is. Well, they can't let that happen. So they took Dagon and they put him back in his place. Then they did their usual business, you know, had the worship events of that day, and then they all go to bed. Verse 4, when they arose early on the next morning, behold, Dagon had fallen face downward on the ground before the ark of He Who Is. So it had happened again, but this time something new occurred. The head of Dagon and both of his hands were lying cut off on the threshold. So the threshold is a division point between rooms. So if you've got an alcove that the Dagon deity, the Dagon idol, is sitting in, there would have been a threshold in front of that, and then beyond that threshold was where the Ark of the Covenant was located. So when the Dagon statue fell forward this time, and God's the one doing this, obviously, the two hands snapped off, and so did the head. Now that is interesting to me, because in the ancient Middle East, it was common practice to prove that you had defeated your enemy by cutting off key body parts. And among the favorite ones were hands and heads. So the Philistines would have been shocked not only that their God had bowed before the God of the Hebrews, but now the God of the Hebrews had taken a war trophy of him, had taken his head, taken his hands. Only the trunk of Dagon was left to him. Verse 5. Explanation from the writer of 1 Samuel. This is why the priests of Dagon and all who enter the house of Dagon do not tread on the threshold of Dagon in Ashdod to this day. So it became the habit of the priests from now on not to step on this crack. You know, step on the crack, break Dagon's back, that sort of thing. So this eventually becomes something we show up in the prophetic literature later, that a lot of the pagan priests of the lower Middle East would jump over the cracks between rooms, the rooms in the temple. They may not have even known why they did it, but they were doing it as a religious thing. But this is where it starts, is because Dagon lost his head and hands by falling on that crack, that transition point between his alcove and where the Ark of the Covenant was located. Verse number 6. The hand of He Who Is was heavy against the people of Ashdod, and he terrified and afflicted them with tumors, both Ashdod and its territory. Remember that the five cities are city-states. So they have the city, which is walled, and then the region around it belongs to that city. So God hits the Ashdod city-state with these growths, these tumors. And because of the fact that the Philistines will later attach rodents to these tumors, it makes me and others suspect that God brought bubonic plague upon the region of Ashdod at this particular moment. Because when you've got the fleas on the rats that bite the people, infection sets in where they get bit, and they start having this reaction in lymph nodes, and they grow these little boo-boos. They're these little tumors, then we have like a 40% fatality rate. So it seems as if we have gods using bubonic plague to punish these people. And they understand the connection here between having the Ark of the Covenant and this outbreak of disaster. Verse 7, when the men of Ashdod saw how things were, they said, the Ark of the God of Israel must not remain with us, for his hand is hard against us and against Dagon, our God. So they sent and gathered together all the lords of the Philistines and said, what shall we do with the Ark of the God of Israel? They answered, let the Ark of the God of Israel be brought around to Gath. Now, it's interesting to me, they don't send it to Ashkelon, a little farther down the coast. They don't send it to Gaza, obviously, because Gaza's temple is destroyed. They choose instead to send it southeast toward Judean territory, toward to Gath, the place that Goliath will come from later. So they brought the Ark of the God of Israel there, and after they'd brought it around, the hand of He Who Is was against that city, causing a very great panic, and he afflicted the men of the city, both young and old, so that tumors broke out on them. So exactly the same thing happens again. I don't know whether or not Dagon's idol at Gath lost his head and feet, or his head and hands, but they definitely started getting the tumors and apparently the rodent outbreak. Come back next time. We'll get into the Word and hear more of this story.